Hi, this is Cass. Welcome to the Curio Podcast, where two old friends hash out current events, politics, and whatever strikes our fancy. Visit us on Twitter at Podcast Curio. Join our Facebook page. Check out our website, curiopodcast.org. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening.
I'm staring down at my palms. The lines I can't understand.
Hi, Kimmy.
Hi, Cass.
Hi, Ziggy.
Woof, woof.
Hair girls.
Can you speak? Guess what show this is? It's Curio Podcast. No, I'm just kidding. Show number 71.
Wow, we've been doing this a while, huh?
We should have a party when it's the 100th show.
Oh, yes!
And we can invite people that have been on or people who have never been on and just want to come hang out with us.
That's a great idea.
Drink wine or something? I don't know.
Can we record it?
Yeah.
Yes!
Stir.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about tonight?
That. We are talking about gratitude.
Yay! I have a quote. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Cultivate the habit of being grateful for every good thing that comes to you, and give thanks continuously because all things have contributed to your advancement. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Aww. There are some really good quotes out there.
Yeah.
About gratitude. And it's Thanksgiving week.
So we thought,
why not?
Let's be gracious? Is that the... No.
Grateful.
Grateful, sorry.
Grateful.
We can also be gracious.
We can.
And graceful.
Well, maybe you can.
I can pretend to be.
Me not so much. Nobody knows. I'm going to snuggle you now.
You want to hear what I found out about gratitude?
I do.
Firstly,
lay it on me, sister.
I watched a thing on Soul Pancake. That's Rainn Wilson's company. You've heard of them, right?
No.
YouTube. They're big on YouTube. They do feel-good experiments and interviews and things like that.
Oh, how cool.
So they did an experiment where they had people come in and, you know, all different people, all different walks of life, and think of someone that they felt gratitude towards, and to write them a letter explaining why they felt grateful towards that person. And so they show each person, it's like five or six people, writing this letter to this person that they feel grateful for. And then the interviewer says, okay, now we're going to have you call your sister, or now we're going to have you call your teacher, or now we're going to have you call your mother.
Wow.
And their faces changed, and all of them had this like, oh shit, look on their face, but like huge smiles. So before they started the experiment, they gave them a sort of happiness test. Uh-huh. They didn't tell them what they were going for. It was just questions, vague questions. And so there was one guy who couldn't call the person because the person was dead.
Oh.
So what they discovered is that one guy who couldn't call but had felt that appreciation and had written it down, mm-hmm. his happiness level went up 4%.
So they tested him afterwards too?
They tested them afterwards. The other people that were able to connect with the person that they felt gratitude towards, uh-huh. their happiness level went up 14% on average.
Wow.
So what they showed with that was that feeling gratitude and knowing that you feel grateful for something is one thing, but actually expressing it gives you much more benefit.
Wow.
And it helps the other person feel good too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was looking at all the health and mental health benefits of what'd you say?
I said, it's contagious.
Exactly. Okay. Research suggests that grateful people sleep better, have healthier hearts, and fewer mm-hmm. aches and pains. Gratitude can make you happier, improve relationships, and counteract depression and suicidal thoughts. And the greatest results come from expressing the gratitude. So if that takes the form of a journal, or writing letters to people, or calling them on the phone.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be face-to-face?
It doesn't have to be face-to-face.
It can just be a daily practice.
Yes.
Okay.
Writing it down. A study at Berkeley found that participants who kept a gratitude journal for 2 weeks reported better physical health, including fewer headaches, less stomach pain, clearer skin, and reduced congestion. So there was another experiment that I read about where they had three groups keeping journals. One group kept a gratitude journal. One group kept a just daily write whatever you want. They weren't given any instructions. Write whatever you want journal. And the third group was writing down things that annoyed them or were making them angry every day.
Oh.
And what happened is what you would imagine happened. The people who wrote the gratitude journal had a marked increase in happiness and health. I'm not talking right.
Physical health, emotional health, exactly. Well-being.
The regular people had zero, one way or the other. No just effect.
Whatever.
And the people that were writing down the things that annoyed them had a negative effect and were actually less happy than when they started the experiment.
Well, that goes along the lines of self-talk, too. Like,
oh,
if
yeah.
you pay attention to the way you talk to yourself and the things that you say to yourself, which we do all day long, we do it constantly. But when you really pay attention, it's interesting, you know.
So some other benefits, which I thought were interesting, is more and better friendships.
Oh, yeah.
And what they call social capital, where people want to be around you because you're open, you are more friendly, What they found was if a person, let's say you have an acquaintance, you barely know the person, maybe you've met at parties or whatever, and they do something nice. If you thank them, they remember that, and they want to come back to you for more friendship.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because you've expressed that you're grateful for what they've done or what they've said or that they have something to offer you. You've made a connection with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't say thank you enough.
No, not genuinely anyway.
No, I don't think.
And the other part of that was for this social capital that they've discovered is helped with gratitude. It can be as little, the smallest thing, as intently listening to someone without waiting to have your turn to talk.
Yeah.
Just sitting, making eye contact and talking to them without going, well, I, and the other person feels that. They feel that you are genuinely listening to them. That's part of showing them gratitude.
Yes.
And being open. So more friendships, enhanced empathy and less aggression, of course.
Uh-huh.
Which goes with the connection also. Improved self-esteem. Improved mental strength, reduces materialism.
Right.
Which is a huge problem in our society. I think it's the materialism has become our lifestyle.
We are inundated by it constantly. More, 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 better, 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 better. I mean, across the board. You need to look younger. You need to look better. You need a better car. You need a better this. You need a better that. It's insidious and it's everywhere.
But it's become our very identity. We are materialists.
Yeah.
Well, our society.
Americans are consumers before citizens. We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
And if that is our main job in this country is to make the economy go, then, you know.
What good are we as humans who like each other?
What that speaks to a lot of different issues we have socially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the, oh my gosh, the aggression, I mean, gun violence, the lack of connection with people across the board. It's everywhere.
Another benefit, increased energy. And they said that that's actually like a chicken and egg syndrome where increasing your activity will help you feel more grateful. Also, being grateful will help you increase your activity levels. So that's sort of a never-ending cycle, that one. And improving marriage, because if the other person feels appreciated and heard, your marriage is more likely to feel better and stay stronger.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you live with this person and you want to feel like what you do is appreciated.
Right.
I mean, as a most of the time house spouse, I mean, I work, but not a heck of a lot. You know, I do a lot of things that nobody sees unless right. it doesn't get done.
Right.
And even then, it's a crapshoot. So it's nice to, you know that your efforts are being recognized yeah. and appreciated.
I read somewhere once that even with married couples or cohabitating couples, that thing, that gratitude, that being noticed, if it's unmet in even the smallest ways, it feels huge to the other person. Let's say you're on your cell phone and I say something to you and you completely ignore me because you're on Instagram or something.
Right. Yeah.
That's a deep blow to the person who is asking for your attention, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's something to think about. Gratitude also is your undivided attention. You're being kind enough to acknowledge that the other person is
important,
worthy of your time.
Yeah,
yeah, important.
That they're important to you. Yeah. And you care about them and what they have to say, how they're feeling, what's mm-hmm. happening with them. You're cognizant of their time, and you know, we all want that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool thing, gratitude. It is.
Is that your scientific?
That's
analyses.
My scientific analysis, is that it's really cool.
It's really cool. Do you want to hear That's ways really to cool. up your gratitude? I wrote down 8 things.
Oh, yeah.
Don't be picky. Appreciate everything.
Yes.
Not just the positive things.
Right. And that's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can do that, when you can find the silver lining. I was just talking to my neighbor. I'm watching their dog, and I was chit-chatting with them, picking up the key before I came over here, and I noticed that they had an alarm, a house alarm, and I said, oh, you guys have an alarm now, and she said, well, yeah, we got one after we were robbed, and they just took my jewelry, which is, you know, whatever, it wasn't really expensive or anything, but they did leave my husband's mother's wedding ring, and it's the little tiny diamond, and she was, her face lit up. And she was like, and you could see that she was grateful for that one thing. They got other stuff, whatever, but that one thing was left, and it was so important to her.
Yeah.
And that was the silver, and she's like, at least they didn't get that.
Aww.
It was the silver lining. It was the gratitude, like right, bam,
that
right
it,
there.
Yeah.
I
that
was
it.
Robbed, but they didn't take this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's that way all the time. We can focus on what we've lost or we can focus on what we have. Anyway, mm-hmm. go ahead.
Oh, okay. Number 2, find gratitude in your challenges, which is along those lines.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, yeah, that would be really, that would be, that's hard. And I've had to do that a lot and go, well, at least we all learned a lesson, or
right? Where's the
the silver lining?
The nugget in this? There's got to be some. I tell my kids that all the time. You have to, no matter how bad it is, you have to find something to walk away with.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what it is,
mm-hmm.
you have to. Otherwise, it's a wasted experience, and it's just going to fester.
Right.
It's going to turn into something yucky
mm-hmm.
and come out later,
mm-hmm.
probably from your mouth.
Towards me. All right, number 3. Practice mindfulness.
Oh, good old mindfulness.
Because you've got to live in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it teaches you to be in the moment and notice things.
Mm-hmm.
So noticing is part of that gratitude puzzle. Number 4, keep a gratitude journal. Number 5, volunteer.
Oh, yeah.
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 Number 6, express yourself.
Nobody's pregnant or nursing. That's exactly where my head went. I'm like, wait a minute.
Breast milk?
No, no.
I don't have any milk left in those things. It's all dried. Number 7, spend time with loved ones. So if you're finding it hard to express gratitude in your life or find something to be grateful for, go find those people that it's easy to find that with.
Yeah.
If you have a friend who you really appreciate and you can be open and honest with them, go spend time with that person. Mm-hmm. You know, work out your gratitude muscle.
There you go.
And number 8, improve happiness in other parts of your life. So that could be physically, that could be changing a relationship, that could be moving. But if your whole life is miserable, it's going to be hard to find some gratitude.
Right.
Even if you're practicing. So if changes need to be made, make them, is right. basically what they yeah. were saying.
Well, and I think it's chicken and the egg again, yeah. too, is if you can find the bits of your life, if you're in a bad place and you can find the bits of your life that you are grateful for and you are connected to, it grows.
Mm-hmm.
It starts to ooze into other places.
Ooze.
And if you can be mindful about what you're doing and where you are, there's always something to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll be outside working in the yard and it's like, oh, that plant just bloomed. Or, you know, a flower or a bug or something that makes me happy.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
I find myself sometimes just like staring up at the clouds and realize I have this like shit-eating grin on my face. And if anybody is watching me, they'd think I was crazy. But I'm really just very often dumbfounded by the sky.
Yeah.
And now that I'm older and I've been practicing meditation, I appreciate it more. I used to always have a story going in my head and always was looking for, well, what can I get out of this? But like, I don't know how to explain it. It's very materialistic, I think.
What's the benefit?
The benefit, yeah.
What's the benefit?
And also, is it going to be inconvenient to somebody else if I just stand here and look at the sky? You know, my head would always go through all of these things, but now that I've been able to slow my brain down, I really, really appreciate and can let the moment pass. Little things, the mm-hmm. wind on my skin, or yep. sometimes when I'm sitting out here throwing on the wheel, there's a pine tree next door, and when it's warm and the wind is blowing, oh. it smells like camping to me.
Yeah.
And I just close my eyes and stick my face up to the sky, and I have this huge smile on my face before I even realize I'm doing it, and then I go, oh, if somebody were looking at me, they would think I was crazy.
I'm smiling at the sky again. I love that sound. That sound always knocks me down a few notches.
Which sound?
The sound of the wind through a pine tree.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of pine trees in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I'll just sit there and listen. It's amazing. It physically changes me. I can feel my whole body relax.
Yeah.
All the little muscles in my face that are normally like, oh, I'm scowling and making a bad face.
They could hear that from this sound.
Just everything relaxes.
Yeah.
Like, oh. Same thing with quiet.
Anyway, we should take a break. And then when we come back, we can talk about all of the stuff that you jammed into your head about gratitude.
I shoved a bunch of stuff in there.
That's a great place to stop. So please waste my time. I'll gladly sit here. The night goes by. Locked outside of your door. I love you. Kimmy, Kimmy.
Oh.
Going through the menopause.
It makes me grateful for my youth.
Hot flash.
Hot flash. It needs to be a song called
Hot Flash. What'd you find out about gratitudinous?
Well, I went down many rabbit holy
places. You went a little cuckoo.
I went a little cuckoo. I started with the gratitude research, you know, how it affects our bodies and our minds and the benefits and all of that good stuff. And then I started thinking about Thanksgiving, Black Friday. What the hell is up with that?
Yep.
So I researched Thanksgiving, and it's on the website. I wrote it all out. I'm not going to do it again.
Right.
But
go to curiopodcast.org. It's there.
But the crux of it is that, you know, the desire for more and better and more and more and more is insidious. Mm-hmm. And it's a gratitude slayer like nothing else. Mm-hmm. The two cannot coexist. I do not believe in one's mind, in a single moment, those two things can exist.
Right.
So, as we were talking about earlier, we live in a society that really values more and tells us that we need more. All of the advertising that comes at us, more, 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 more.
Mm-hmm.
Everything can be improved upon. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. That's absolutely not true.
Mm-mm.
Things need to be fixed so they work well. You know, we can't just let everything go to hell.
Well, we can.
But eating enough food is enough.
Right.
Having enough money is enough. Having a car that runs is good enough.
Yeah.
Having a safe, solid home is enough. Doesn't matter how big it is. Doesn't matter, you know, how fancy it is or how often it gets painted or how often the draperies get changed. You know, there is a baseline of just being in the world and being content.
That reminds me, somebody did a study, I can't remember who, but they looked at people's happiness in relation mm-hmm. to the amount of money that they made.
Yeah.
And happiness caps out at $50,000 a year.
Yeah. And then it starts to decline.
$50,000 a year.
Yeah.
And you are no happier for making more money and having more things.
Right.
You're happy and to the point of contentment. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated by that. Because you always think like, oh, if I could just win the lottery or,
right,
you know, whatever.
No.
That doesn't make you happy or grateful.
It puts you over the edge. And then more is never enough. Ever. Either you hit a point of contentment or you just keep acquiring and keep looking for more. And, you know, and then suddenly what you have is not good enough anymore. So there is no gratitude. Because what you have is not good enough, according to...
Ever.
I don't know what. Yeah.
That leads to sort of vapidness, doesn't it, in the population? Like a group of people who don't know themselves or aren't real? Because if your only function in a society as a cog in this big mm-hmm. machine is to buy,
mm-hmm.
what are you making? Right. What are you doing? Who are you loving? What are you reading? It's vapid to me. It's without soul.
Right. Yeah. It's all about acquisition.
And Ziggy it's not has the hiccups this week. Last week he was snoring. This week the hiccups. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I want to explain to people what that noise was.
Oh. But yeah, that's the thing. There is a tipping point. Where you get caught up in this race for more, for better. You're going to be better than somebody else. You're going to have more than somebody else. You're going to have something better than you had before. Instead of just being like, oh, I'm content with this. I'm content with this 1948 toaster, which I love to death.
Right.
I don't want a new toaster. It works beautifully. The design is magnificent.
Solid as a rock, right?
I walk into the kitchen in the morning and
is that the one we used to use in Fiesta?
Yes.
Oh my God, I love that one.
Right? It is still in my kitchen. And I walk into the kitchen in the morning, I get my glass of water, and I head toward the coffee pot, which is right next to the toaster, and I always see it, and there's just a little spark of gratitude.
Mm.
Oh, there's the toaster. It's familiar, it's trustworthy, it's, like I said, it works beautifully, and it's
like a family heirloom.
It's a family heirloom, and it's just perfect. And every once in a while, Paul will be like, why don't we get a new toaster? And I'm like, oh, hell no.
Oh.
Don't touch the fucking toaster.
So listeners, my kitchen finally got painted after, how long have I lived in this house? 18 years. And my husband put a new hood in over the stove, and our stove is a vintage 1940s, mm-hmm. What's the brand? I forget.
A W. It has a W.
No, it's the other one. It's two names.
It's, there's no W in it?
Anyway, it's beautiful. It's one of my favorite things. And my husband says, we should get a new stove that matches the hood. And I was like,
no.
Oh, no.
No.
And I rarely put my foot down because he has such distinct ideas about what he wants.
Yes.
That I just let him go because they're usually good. And so then I was like, no.
Mm-mm.
My stove. Go away. Don't touch it. Leave me alone.
Not going to happen. Leave the stove alone.
We don't need new things because that thing works perfectly.
Yeah.
And for a while, I kept a temperature gauge inside thinking to myself, like, oh, it's an old stove. It was his. He brought it to the marriage. And so when we first started using it, I was using a temperature gauge to make sure that it was correct. It was always right on. Mm-hmm. And I ended up throwing the temperature gauge away because it bakes perfectly every time. Anyway, right? That was a tangent and a rant. Sorry.
But that's, can you get any better than that? You cannot get any better than that. It works beautifully. You're familiar with it. You know everything about it. There's nothing better. There really isn't. Mm-hmm. And I think perspective has a lot to do with gratitude too. Like, I have this thing and it works great and it's, I don't need anything else. I'm grateful.
Or I've got
for
enough
it.
Clothes, even though I bought them at the thrift store. They cover my body. I'm not indecent.
Right. They keep me warm. They're, yeah.
I used to think, like when I was younger, because I've always been a thrift store shopper, that I would someday grow up and want to be like a fashionista, or someday I would be mature enough to go, oh, there's a sale at Barney's or whatever.
Right.
And want to do that, want to buy new clothes and want
right.
to
yeah.
have things. And the older I've gotten, the worse it's gotten.
Yeah.
The more I don't want to buy new clothes or be fashionable. I just want clothes that fit my body, preferably yeah. used, so that I'm not adding to the
right.
fast fashion
if it's used,
nightmare.
It's even better.
Yes.
Like, I didn't contribute to a sweatshop.
Right. I mean, you do indirectly, but
well,
you're
yeah,
reusing
you're
something
reusing
that somebody else was going to throw away. So anyway.
It's perfectly good.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I hate shopping.
I hate shopping.
I don't like it when my weight fluctuates. So that's because if I gain too much weight or if I lose a bunch of weight, then I have to get new clothes and I don't want to have to do that. So I'm always like, no.
Stay this weight. I don't
okay,
care.
Okay, the holidays are coming. I have to be careful. And it's not like I don't want to gain weight because I'll be fat or I won't
right.
look good. It's because I don't want to have to
buy new clothes.
I don't care how I look. Whatever. But God almighty, don't send me to the mall.
No.
No. Uh-uh. So it's yeah, so we have these things that work well and they're fine and they do their job. And that leaves a lot of room for gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
To be grateful for these things that work, for friendships that we've had for a long time,
mm-hmm.
Connections that we have in our community or with our environment.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much out there. There's such a rich landscape.
Oh my God.
Of things to be grateful for instead of trying to acquire more, because that's empty. That's mm-hmm. an empty feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I got a new pair of pants.
Yeah. Yeah. And then tomorrow you're going to not care.
Right. And then they're going to be old pants tomorrow and right. you're going to need another new pair. And it's a snowball. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's never any satisfaction. It never fills the hole or makes us feel full. I guess that's the word I'm looking for. Full.
Yeah.
It's almost like the more space you make, the fuller you become.
Well, it also affords you, speaking of space, more time. If you're not yeah. wrapped up in the acquisition of crap.
Right.
You've got more time to learn new things or go experience new things mm-hmm. or meet people or try a new food or you name it. Take up an art, you know, all that stuff. Like,
yeah.
I feel now that I'm older, I have created more space for that. Instead of thinking of what I should be doing, even though I never wanted to do it, or what I could be doing, I'm not doing this fast enough, or, you know, yeah. instead I'm just taking it moment by moment and not giving too much time to things that don't matter.
Right.
So I have the space and the time and the ability to slow my head down now.
How did you figure out what matters to you?
Well, I mean, we had a few very traumatic years with my daughter. She was suicidal. I've talked about this on the podcast. She's mentally ill. For several years, I was on high alert all the time.
Mm-hmm.
High alert all the time, every single day. I wasn't sleeping. You know, my weight was fluctuating up and down, and I wasn't healthy. I ended up in a deeper depression than I've ever been in. But during that time, two of the times she was hospitalized was at UCLA, and they had a mindfulness meditation free for anybody on the campus.
Oh, wow.
And any of the hospitals, any of the students, anybody in the community can come. So I was there every day with her because she was so young at the time that and UCLA is kind of far driving from here, not as the crow flies, but driving. Mm. And so I remember the first time I went to one of the seminars, it was held at one of the museums down there in Westwood near UCLA. And it was just one of the professors from one of the departments. And they've taken up mindfulness huh. there at UCLA. And I remember one of the things she was talking about was feeling the air on the back of your neck. And it had never even occurred to me to slow my brain down enough to feel something happening outside of my head on my body, at least not during that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was sort of a little seed mm-hmm. that got planted. And then many more years of much more pain and suffering. And had gotten to a point where I had to come to terms several times with the possibility that my daughter could die.
Yeah.
And it made everything else melt away.
Mm-hmm.
It made everything that seemed important to me before not important at all. And, you know, I think I have form of PTSD from that, and I have been working, clawing my way back out of that hole for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned a lot, and I was talking about being grateful for a situation that's horrible, the worst. I wouldn't be where I am now if I hadn't gone through all that. I would have never discovered meditation. I never would have peeled back all those layers of things that I thought I was supposed to be doing or
mm-hmm.
how things appeared to other people. I don't give a shit anymore what other people think about how weird my family is, or, you know, I know that I'm a good person and I'm a good parent and she's safe now. And, well, mostly. But, Yeah, I'm grateful for that opportunity that I had to tear everything else away and to have to come to terms with life and death.
Yeah.
To have to say to myself, well, this might be the time.
Right.
I remember I was in the emergency room a couple of hospitalizations ago. And she was very manic and delusional, paranoid, screaming, crying, singing, throwing things at me, trying to hit me. And nobody in the hospital could control her. And so what happens when somebody has a mental break like that and you go to the emergency room, they have to find you a bed in a facility. So you've got to wait. And sometimes I've waited in an emergency room with her for 24 or more hours.
Oh, my God.
For a bed.
Wow.
And when these last few times she's been so dangerous that they have us in the hallway, not in a room where she could hide or grab something. So they have her in a hallway. And this last time they had her with two security guards.
Wow.
And me. So I don't sleep. But at some point, she finally fell asleep. And she hadn't slept for like 2 weeks.
Oh, my God. Oh.
So the nurse came over and said, why don't you go get a cup of coffee? It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I go and I get a cup of coffee. And the thought that popped into my head was, this is my fault for wanting her.
Oh, no.
This is my fault for having her and bringing her into the world against her will.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my mom and I said, Ella's in the hospital again. I'm in the emergency room, blah, 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 blah. And I said those words out loud to her. And I felt like the worst person in the world. And it wasn't, I wish she had never been born. It was, this is my fault.
Right. Yeah.
I did this to her by materializing her into this universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that was maybe the lowest point for me. And I was in a severe depression because I'd been her sole caretaker for since she was 10 going through this. And homeschooling because she got kicked out of elementary school. You know, like it's been me and her 24/7 all this time. And so at that point, it was like my brain broke and I had to go, okay, so nothing matters. Nothing. Not in a bad way, in a good way. The facades don't matter. The what people think of me doesn't matter.
All
of it.
Right. It is what it is. It's just exactly what it is. No.
So having that thought and saying it out loud to my mother, it kind of freed me in a way.
Yeah.
It freed me to make this space to go, okay, every day is not guaranteed. People will go away. Moments pass.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing I can do to control any of it. I can't control any of it.
Yep.
So I'm free. And it took something really bad, really bad, to free me from the constraints of what I thought I should be as a mother, as a wife, as a member of our communism, or not communism, wait, what's the word? Commercialistic society.
Our commercialistic society with all of these norms that don't really exist, that everybody strives to attain, but they're not real.
No.
You know, that's one of the things about Facebook, is that everybody puts their best face forward on Facebook. But no.
It's not real.
The shinier and the more beautiful it is, there's stuff going on. You just have to know that.
Yeah.
So after this happened, You felt free?
I felt free, and this is going to sound bad. People might judge me. I felt free from her also. Right. She was about to turn 18 she was going to turn 18 like 2 months after that hospitalization. She's 19 now. And she's been hospitalized again. But it made me go, okay, this is her life. and I'll be here and I'll help where I can, but I'm not going to try and run this show anymore. I can't.
Right.
She's going to be 18 and I have no power legally over her. So it really freed me.
You were able to detach.
Yes.
In a healthy way, in a good way.
It wasn't a good thing, but it feels better now. It wasn't good the way it happened. It's a terrible situation for somebody to have to go through to feel
right
that normal detachment from someone. But we were very enmeshed, relationship, because she depended on me for everything. I mean, there were periods of time when she's paranoid or filled with anxiety. If we went out, she can't speak to people, or she starts seeing things, and I'm her only life source. I'm her only umbilical cord, you know? But I do feel removed from it, and that I needed that because I was, it was painful for me day in and day out to feel like I felt very isolated. Like nobody understood what was happening, you know, and everybody always concentrates on the sick person. Well, the caregivers are going through shit, you know? Not that I need sympathy, but like I felt very isolated. In addition, also because it's a mental illness.
Right. Which isn't like,
you can't go around screaming it off the mountaintops. Anyway.
But you were able to, detach from the ideas that you had. The preconceived ideas, the plans, the way that you were wanted things to be, and in that way you were able to see just what it was. And this is what's happening right now. This is what's going on.
It helped me to be more in the moment every day, because I only had that day. Mm-hmm. If she got violent, and last time the police had to take her away, she's tried to kill herself. I mean, there have been situations where I'm like, okay, today's the day, the last day. So it freed me in the way where I can live in the moment, or I'm choosing to live in the moment, because that's all I have.
Right.
So I do pay attention more to every day. There was something else I was going to say.
About gratitude?
Oh, no, I was going to say that it's a grieving process. It's grieving a life that I thought that I was going to have.
Yeah.
It's grieving for a child's, you know, every parent has expectations, even if they don't want to admit it.
Hopes.
You have hopes and dreams for your kids. You want them to be happy live a normal life, and whatever that means. And I've had to grieve that idea several times.
Yeah.
Each time it's gotten worse for her, the grieving seems bigger. But this last time was such that I was the one that had to call the police on her, because she had taken a sledgehammer to the house. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks before that, she had thrown boulders at me because I wouldn't drive her somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I had talked to my therapist about it. And she said to me, well, when's it going to be too much? Where's your line? And I was like, I don't know that I have one. That's how entrenched I was with her.
Yeah,
I was going to let her hurt me, basically. And I, you know, my therapist was counseling me, like, there has to be a line and you're gonna find it, but you can't let her hurt you. And I was like, oh, she would never hurt me or whatever. So when she took the sledgehammer to the house, I was the one that called the sheriff. So that was a really distinct line I drew between her and I. To this day, she still resents me for that and mentions it. So during that hospitalization, she did not want me there. And so I was always the caregiver, the love giver, the hug giver.
Right.
And that role was taken from me by my own hand, but I became free of it. And I'm telling you, this sounds like a sad story, but it freed me.
Yeah.
this situation has made me a more open, bigger, more compassionate, stronger person. I know where boundaries are now, and I never knew that before. Anyway, that's enough about me.
So that's like the ultimate story of being grateful for a really difficult, torturous situation.
Yeah.
But you have to be.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to, that at least that's what I think, is you've got to come through something like that.
Better. Yeah.
More open, with a greater understanding of yourself too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, there are some things that you do have control over, and there are some things that you just don't. You just don't. And I think the sooner everybody learns to let go of trying to have control over the things that we just don't have any control over.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier across the board.
I agree.
Because, you know, trying to have that control is also a way of acquiring something unattainable.
Your expectations. Mm-hmm. You want to acquire the things you were expecting.
Right. Yeah. Right. I invested this much, and this is what I expect in return.
I gave birth to you. I need you to do well in school.
Right. I need this to happen. This is what I expect.
Right.
You know.
So having gratitude also involves letting go of everything then, and noticing everything in the moment, whether it's good or bad.
I think so.
Did we just sum it up?
Oh, there's so much more, though.
Tell me, Kimmy.
We can have gratitude in every moment of the day, if we choose to. And you talked about some ways to practice gratitude and like have concrete markers during our day or our week or daily dealings.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm feeling really crappy, I will write down a gratitude list.
Yeah, you've told me that.
And I love lists. That's no secret.
No.
So I have all kinds of lists. And now I try to challenge myself to get away from just the, I'm grateful for my family and my friends and my home and food and trees and dogs and blah, 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 blah. But to try to, you know, dig a little deeper and find some other bits and pieces out there.
Yeah.
So it's a good challenge, but I think it does.
What are some of the most deep, weird things you've written on one of your gratitude lists? Can you share? Do you remember?
Oh gosh. No, I don't.
Oh, you let it go.
I let it go.
And you feel better afterwards.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But it's so important now in our society. Right now, we're experiencing great upheaval on so many levels. And it feels like there is, the ether is electric with angst.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only way to fight it is just to keep going back to gratitude and compassion and kindness.
Yeah. Love and connection.
Yeah. And to stay away from fear.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. But gratitude will slay fear as well.
Ooh, it's a dragon slayer?
It's a dragon slayer.
Now, you said you had a couple of quotes.
Oh, yes. So, okay. So, when there are big holidays or even little holidays, I usually write some, I call them refrigerator correspondences. And I write down a story about whatever is happening. St. Patrick's Day or benefits of electric dishwashing machines.
Oh, yeah. I read that one.
So today, or this was the other day, I wrote down, I took a sticky notepad and I wrote down quotes and I wrote down little things about gratitude, and I've been sticking them all over my house, and I'm probably going to stick them around your house too.
Good idea.
So, when one is sincerely grateful, there is no room for envy.
That's true.
Yeah, it is.
There's a quote that goes with that. A rising tide lifts all ships.
Yes.
Right. Don't bring each other down. Lift each other up.
Right.
Let's lift all of us up together.
Right. And why are we trying to be better than...
More.
Other people.
Consume more.
More. I mean, what? I don't get a kick out of feeling like I'm better than other people, at least consciously. I might have some quirks, some subconscious quirks going on that I'm not aware of yet.
I have one I told you about at the museum, feeling morally superior to people. That I'm working on.
I might do that too. I get pretty entrenched in my opinions. And
yeah, sorry, go ahead with your post-it notes.
But to try to, you know, look better than other people or have better things than other people is just not my cup of tea. I remember feeling envy once so strongly and so powerfully, it frightened me. It was frightening. And it was with Becky and her mom.
Oh.
And I probably never told her that. Maybe she's listening. But she and Donna, her mom, were sitting on their couch. This was not long after my mom had died. And they were sitting on their couch in Donna's living room. And Becky put her feet up in her mom's lap. And Donna started to rub her feet.
Oh.
And I was sitting in the chair. And it was a really profound moment. It changed cells in my body.
That sounds painful.
Well, it was...
Like my chest is hurting for you right now.
It was one of those moments where it was like, I don't get to have this.
Yeah.
This is not anything I will ever, ever get to have.
Right.
And so, you know, it was a moment where I had to kind of reckon with some things and figure some stuff out. I was cognizant of it at the time. And I knew mm-hmm. that I was, and God only knows what my face looked like. But it wasn't comfortable. It was a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
And at the time I knew that.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine feeling that on any level, to any degree, regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that it would inspire a person or propel them to acquire more, be right. more.
Or tear other people down.
It just wasn't, it wasn't okay.
There's a silver lining in that, though, in that Donna became a mother figure for you.
Well, yeah.
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 I'm not trying to minimize what happened to you, but you saw in her motherly behavior, and you probably gravitated towards her for that. Or she took you under her wing a little. I don't know.
I think after my mom died, there were a few women who kind of perked up and, you know, gave me a little extra attention.
Sometimes I've wondered, since I met you right after your mom died, if you liked hanging out with me because I didn't know you as that, as the girl whose mom had died. That maybe you could be more normal with me.
I never thought of that.
I'd had the thought maybe a year ago, and I thought, oh, I should ask her about that.
That's really interesting. Maybe.
Like, I didn't know you, and you were like, let's hang out. Okay.
Right.
And I didn't know your story.
No.
Yeah, so I wasn't looking at you with the same eyes as maybe other people were.
Wow, that's really interesting. Probably like, oh, I can be normal.
Yeah.
In her eyes, I'm just normal.
Yeah.
I don't have this baggage attached to me. Huh.
Anyway,
go ahead. Good observation, Cass. Yeah. Yes.
She literally has a piece of paper with post-its all over it. That's the sound you're hearing. Go ahead.
Yeah, because I was writing them and then slapping them on the paper because I couldn't make another stack. That wasn't going to happen. Fill the earth with your songs of gratitude. Charles Spurgeon.
Aww.
That was a pretty one.
I like that.
Let's see. Aesop says, gratitude is the sign of noble souls.
That is noble, isn't it?
Right.
When you think about the people that you know who are happy and give thanks and are grateful, they're nicer to be around.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You think more highly of them.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. Look forward to them being, yeah, yeah. The essence of all beautiful art, all great art, is gratitude.
Oh,
Nietzsche.
Nietzsche.
I know, right? I was like, what? Okay. Gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, but the parent of all others. I thought that was a really interesting one.
Oh, wow. That just blew my mind.
Right? Is that crazy?
Because it works.
Totally, dude. It's like,
oh, man.
Gratitude had a bunch of baby virtues.
I just saw a spider web with gratitude in the middle and all the other ones coming out.
Oh.
From the center of gratitude.
So, wait, what are the seven virtues?
The
charity?
Seven. We don't know these things. What?
I just saw them at the Fufizi.
Fufizi.
The Fufizi.
Siri, what are the seven gratitudes? No, the seven virtues.
She's like, what?
She's going to be like, what? Oh, she's not even working now. God, Siri, when I need you, you embarrass me.
It's like, oh, charity, justice.
You know what's funny is if my mom knows them right now, she's saying them back to us as she's
listening. I can hear her too. I can hear her sweet little voice.
Here it is. Oh, these are heavenly virtues. Chastity, abstinence, liberality, diligence, patience, kindness, and humility. No, that's religious.
Patience, kindness, and humility, I believe, are... So there are...
Oh, wait, here they are.
Religious virtues, and then there are, like, the real virtues for everybody else.
Okay. These are...
Because chastity ain't gonna work.
Okay, here are the cardinal virtues, not the heavenly.
Mm-hmm.
Moderation, prudence, justice, fortitude... What? That's not seven. Prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance.
And then the religious ones make up the rest?
I don't know. I think you should make up your own.
Okay.
Be cool.
Don't be a dick.
Be fun. Give thanks.
Dance.
Sleep and eat when you're supposed to.
Sing. Make things.
Don't be a dick. Did you say that one already?
I said don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
That
Donald
hard
Trump.
For some people.
We almost got through a whole episode without mentioning his name.
Joy is the simplest form of gratitude.
I love joy.
Right?
I love enthusiasm and being joyful for other people so they can feel enthusiastic.
Doesn't it feel good to be happy for other people?
It really does.
It does.
That's something I learned from my mom. She gets very enthusiastic for people.
Aww.
For other people. Like, oh my God, you're the greatest thing ever! And I have found myself doing that as I get older.
Isn't that cool, though? Oh. What separates privilege from entitlement is gratitude.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. That's a big one these days.
Have sort of a negative connotation for both of those words, but...
Privilege and entitlement?
Yeah.
Well, if you're born into privilege...
You can still be not a dick.
You can still be not a dick if you're grateful for what you have.
Right.
Like, wow, this is a lot. I should share this and... Not, you know.
Be a dick.
And think I'm better than other people because of it. Because I haven't done anything for it.
I should probably not tell people that I'm a stable genius.
Right. Yeah. Oh, God. So I've been having a lot of gratitude for the vision that I used to have of our democracy in America. Because that's helping me fight the dark, dark vision I'm starting to have of our future.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And I've got, as Abby does, the catastrophic thinking thing. So I've spent a lot of energy lately trying not to go there.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
It is hard.
It's really hard because it's getting weird out there. It's starting to feel like, I mean, I think all along, and I probably said
but it
this
always
before,
felt like something was coming. It was weird, but it was coming. Now it feels like it's here. Like this is the meat.
It feels like we're getting up to something.
Yes.
That a turning point. And I kind of feel like we've already hit a turning point. It occurred to me last night when I read Heather Cox Richardson's post last night, which was not as hopeful as it usually is. Did you read it?
No.
It was kind of like, this is what's happening in the world of law right now. And
there are some good things happening in the world of law, though.
There are, but there's also some like...
There's terrible things happening, but some good things.
So it occurred to me that, you know, Trump's in cahoots with Russia. That's...
Established,
and it's just that's what's happening. Happened. But I thought, he will become obsolete soon.
Trump, to Putin, you mean?
Trump will become obsolete to the powers that are pulling his strings. He has rallied a mass of Americans who are going to vote. He's got them on board with his ideology. He has given them the Kool-Aid, and they have drained the pitcher. And
stocked up on their ammunition.
And he's not a smart man.
You're saying he's not a stable genius?
He will become a liability quickly. I think he's been played this whole time, and he's gone along with it, and they've stroked his ego and told him how wonderful he is, and it's all going great. And now I was looking at his face, like with the dog and the pictures recently, the trip to the hospital, and I thought, he could blow the whole thing to bits. But he's not smart enough to do it. And he's too egotistical to do it for the benefit of the country. He is expendable. And if he becomes a martyr, I don't even want to go there.
I happen to think that the people who helped him become president wanted all of this chaos. They want more chaos than this.
They definitely wanted all this chaos, but I think that there's a greater plan in place that is, we're at a tipping point with it.
Well, I hope so, one way or the other. I can't stay here anymore.
Oh, it's
at
just,
this anxiety level. Oi!
I mean, you know, Nunes getting called out. I'm waiting for Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham. They've got to have some freaky ass shit going on with them.
Oh, they're opening an investigation into Joe Biden. That's what Lindsey declared today.
Oh, right.
Yes. I should make a Lindsey Graham bust. Oh, I'm going to make a whole set. A
I
whole
think you should.
Russian traitors set. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, because now I'm not feeling so grateful. Okay, Cass, what are you grateful for? Fast.
Fast.
Off the top of your head. No thinking.
The sky.
No thinking. Okay.
Like the most right now. It calms me down.
The sky.
Yeah. It's awesome. Always there, no matter what's happening.
It is.
What are you grateful for? Fast. No thinking. Off the top of your head.
I'm grateful for this podcast.
Yay!
And the studio. And you. And sitting here every week. It's true.
I told you last week off air. When I was drunk, you know, when you get the I love yous when you're drunk.
When I was drunk.
That I just appreciate You're special to me.
You're special to me too, Kaz.
I'm afraid if we hug right now, Ziggy will bite one of us.
And we'll cry.
All right, one last thing before we go, before we wrap up. My school, the ceramics department, is having a sale.
Oh!
December 14th from 1 to 5, free parking, Glendale College. Come, there's going to be bargain, all the way from student bargain basement prices on up, as much as you want to pay, for very special handmade ceramics just in time for Christmas. And we get a portion of the money. A portion of the money goes to the school to help us buy, you know, glaze material and
all the goodies,
80 mesh strainers and shit like that. So,
wow.
If you're in the Glendale area, come out on Saturday, December 14th, from 1 to 5.
Cool.
I'll be there.
Cassie's been making some really cool stuff.
Very quickly, before we go, Doug and I went to Hollywood to go to this restaurant 2 weeks ago, 2 weekends ago. And in this area where we were is a Best Buy, and we were using that parking structure because parking in Hollywood is hard and expensive. We kept seeing people with giant TVs, loading them into their cars. We go up to the street level. There's people parked everywhere loading giant TVs into their cars. We go to dinner, have the greatest time. We come back, more people shoving TVs into their cars, go back down to the car. As we're pulling around, we see a family putting two giant TVs with the help of an employee into their car. And I just stopped out of sheer curiosity and I said, excuse me, what's going on? Why is everybody buying giant TVs? And the worker started laughing and he goes, oh, we started our Black Friday sales early.
Oh my gosh, 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
Oh.
Giant TVs!
Giant TVs so that you can sit in front of them and learn and be taught to consumerism.
Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
New word.
Be grateful, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
We're grateful for you.
And you too, Zee. Curio Podcast is a Porch Swing production. Big thanks to all of our contributors and special guests. For more info, please visit Twitter at Podcast Curio, Curio Podcast on Facebook, and CurioPodcast.org. And remember, Curio Podcast loves you.